Hello, this is Marc Imbert speaking, chief editor of the European Respiratory Journal. Today, it is my privilege to speak with one of our associate editors, Professor Claudia Cuny, from the Pediatric Epidemiology Group at the Institute of Social and Preventive Medicine, University of Bern in Bern, Switzerland. Claudia is one of our associate editors in charge of pediatric pulmonology. She is a prominent expert on asthma, on primary ciliary dyskinesia, and on many other important pediatric topics. And today, it's our great pleasure to discuss an important article which will be published in the October issue of the European Respiratory Journal. This article is by Tennyson and colleagues, and it is entitled The Effect of 3% and 6% Hypertonic Saline in Viral Bronchiolitis, a Randomized Controlled Trial. And Claudia Cuny, together with Jörg Barben, has written a very interesting and catchy editorial entitled Hypertonic Saline for Acute Viral Bronchiolitis, Take the Evidence with a Grain of Salt. That's a nice title. Hello, Claudia.
Good morning, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today. And I will ask you a few questions just to emphasize the importance of this article and the related editorial to our readers. So first, what is the current burden of acute viral bronchiolitis?
Bronchiolitis is actually the most common lower respiratory tract disease in infants. It's caused by respiratory syncytial virus usually, and most infants get infected with RSV in their first year of life. However, only about 30% of them will develop bronchiolitis of a varying degree of severity, and about 3% will be admitted to hospital. It's seasonal, so it occurs in all climates between November and March with a peak in around January. And during these winter months, it really accounts for a large proportion of pediatric hospitalizations and emergency care visits. So the clinics are really full of these infants. And hospitalization rates have rather increased during the past 10 years due to probably a better survival of preterm infants and other high-risk groups. So children with underlying medical problems such as ex-preterms or children with cardiac disease tend to have more severe bronchiolitis, be more often hospitalized, and they have hospitalization rates going up to 6 or 10%. So healthcare costs for the disease are really considerable. For the US, they have been calculated as about $500 million per year. And the treatment which would reduce hospitalization or reduce length of stay would really be welcome and confer considerable savings in healthcare costs.
Thank you, Claudia. This is indeed a very important burden and a key topic in pediatrics in general and in pediatric pulmonology in particular. So you mentioned one virus, but what are the main viruses responsible? Are there many?
It's usually in about 70 to 75% it's caused by the respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. But there are other viruses implicated, including human metapneumovirus, influenza and parainfluenza, rhinovirus and adenovirus. It's possible to have a co-infection, for instance, with RSV and human metapneumovirus. And it's even possible to have a reinfection during a single season, so it doesn't confer immunity.
Thank you. And what is the state of the art management of acute viral bronchiolitis today?
So as said, in most infants, the disease is self-limiting and mild and lasts typically between 3 and 7 days. And about 50% of the kids are symptom-free within 2 weeks, but some have really long-lasting symptoms for 4 weeks or more. Most of the infants can be managed at home with primary care, and the children who have to be hospitalized, they receive gentle supportive care, including mainly oxygen, if necessary, fluid management, where necessary, including nasogastric tube feeding or IV fluids, nasal douche or nasal suction, nasal decongestions, and avoidance of unnecessary handling. So it's really unspecific, supportive, gentle care. And many treatments have been tested, but none has really shown to improve short or long-term outcomes. Treatments being tested and also often still being used for bronchiolitis include bronchodilators with beta-2 agonists or anticholinergics, anti-inflammatory medication, oral or inhaled corticosteroids or montelukast, nebulized epinephrine, chest physiotherapy, antivirals or antibiotics, and really none of these treatments has shown a good effect. So nebulized hypertonic saline was one of the last treatments which looked really promising. A Cochrane review, which summarized papers indexed in Medline until May 2013, concluded that hypertonic saline might reduce length of hospital stay and improve severity scores. However, the studies included in this review were heterogeneous and sample sizes relatively small, so new large studies were really necessary.
Okay, so the paper by Tennyson and colleagues is very timely, if I understand very well. So what did they do, and what is the take-home message from their paper?
Yeah, I agree. Tennyson and co-authors performed the second largest RCT on hypertonic saline and bronchiolitis to date, and it's the only true multicenter studies. They included 247 patients from 11 general hospitals and one tertiary care center in the Netherlands, so really the full spectrum of hospitalized bronchiolitis patients. And they compared two different concentrations of hypertonic saline, 3% and 6%, with normal saline. They conducted their study very carefully in young infants, aged on average 3 months, a typical age, used clear inclusion criteria, excluded all children with possible asthma, so those who had previous wheeze allergy, or those who responded to one dose of salbutamol on admission. Their primary outcome was length of hospital stay, as defined by the time between the first dose of medication and the decision to discharge. Unfortunately, their results were negative. So neither of the two concentrations of hypertonic saline did reduce length of hospital stay, nor were secondary outcomes influenced. These were need for supplemental oxygen or tube feeding or the one clinical severity score. If anything, there was a tendency for longer stays and more side effects, coughing and agitation in infants who received hypertonic saline. And actually, three other studies published very recently showed basically the same disappointing results. Only one large trial by Wu and co-authors from the US found slightly lower admission rates in children treated with hypertonic saline, but no effect on length of stay. So in summary, we're back to the recommendations published 50 years ago by Reynold and Cook, who said oxygen is still vitally important in bronchiolitis, and there is little convincing evidence that any other therapy is consistently or even occasionally useful.
Well, thank you. It's indeed a very important take-home message, and the points are well taken, and we have to publish indeed negative large randomized controlled trials which help us to better manage these patients. So because there is no really important new positive data, let's talk a little bit about prevention. So what are the best prevention measures of acute viral bronchiolitis?
There is no really effective prevention measure for acute bronchiolitis. The responsible viruses are widespread, and the majority of infected infants develops only upper respiratory symptoms and cough, so only few proceed to have bronchiolitis or pneumonia. As the viruses don't confer a lasting immunization, there is no active immunization available, and it's unlikely that an RSV vaccine would protect against RSV infections because natural infection does not. There is the possibility of passive immunization with palivizumab, a humanized monoclonal RSV antibody. But this, again, does not prevent RSV infection. If anything, it reduces slightly hospitalization rates in high-risk infants, preterm, sickly infants. It does, however, not affect length of hospital stay, need of oxygen, mechanical ventilation, or mortality. And costs are far higher than savings achieved by possible reductions in hospital admissions. So routine use is not recommended. It might perhaps be considered on a case-by-case basis for selected high-risk infants. As for other respiratory illnesses in infants, some environmental factors play a role in prevention, so children who are breastfed, particularly 6 months or longer, have some protection against RSV hospitalization. They develop less severe disease, and children exposed to maternal or paternal smoking during pregnancy or during the first year of life have a higher risk for RSV hospitalizations, as have children who are exposed to more infections by older siblings or by going to daycare.
Thank you for these very interesting information. And to conclude briefly, what are the proposed criteria for future therapeutic studies in infants with acute viral bronchiolitis?
So as said, currently available treatment data are derived mostly from small and heterogeneous studies, and results for the different treatments are conflicting and difficult to interpret. Importantly, inclusion criteria and even the definition of bronchiolitis differed between studies. Researchers from the UK and Australia, for instance, emphasize in their definition young age, below 6 to 12 months, and regard the presence of fine inspiratory cackles and lung auscultation as the hallmark of disease. American definitions of bronchiolitis are wider. They don't request cackles and place much more emphasis on the presence of wheeze, and they also include children aged until 2 years. So American studies might include many children with a first episode of asthma who could react differently to some of the tested drugs. So inclusion of such varying disease phenotypes in past studies might explain some of the contradictory findings. I therefore believe that for further research, experts from the US and Europe must sit together and decide on a common definition of acute viral bronchiolitis, or if they want, on different subgroups. I think future studies should be large and multicenter and include patients both from secondary and tertiary care hospitals. They must use standardized and clearly defined interventions and outcome measures, and they should consider variable response to treatments by different patient subgroups or phenotypes. We could have a first approach at this, doing an individual patient data meta-analysis of existing trial data sets to see if treatment response vary by phenotype, by age of the children, by severity, by asthma-like features. And then, using the findings from this secondary analysis, we could then formally test this in future trials. So I think the way to the future is really working together and in a group which includes people from both sides of the big ocean.
Well, these points are very well taken. Thank you very much, Claudia, for this most interesting conversation. I hope that our readers will not only read the paper by Tennyson, but also your very nice editorial you wrote with Dr. Barben. And this was Marc Imbert, chief editor of the European Respiratory Journal, discussing the paper by Tennyson and colleagues entitled The Effect of 3% and 6% Hypertonic Saline in Viral Bronchiolitis, a Randomized Controlled Trials. And we are discussing today with Professor Claudia Cuny, associate editor of the ERJ from the University of Bern. Thank you again.